You may not know who the artist Shepard Fairey is, but trust me, you know his work. In the late 1980s, his Andre the Giant Has a Posse sticker campaign went viral, adorning nearly every skateboard and record shop in America. He later added the word obey to the Andre the Giant image, and it became legendary. But it wasn't until 2008 when he turned that Andre the Giant obey image into the iconic Barack Obama hope poster that the artist Shepard Fairey became truly famous. But in his world, a world of skateboarding and graffiti and the hip-hop credo of keeping it real, making a poster for a U.S. presidential candidate, well, that enters sellout land. Shepard Fairey took Ann Strainchamps back to the genesis of his now infamous Andre the Giant sticker.
I was teaching a friend how to make a stencil. He wanted to learn how to do it. I was making homemade Clash t-shirts and things like that. And I was also making all the shirts for a skate shop where I worked in Providence, Rhode Island. And he wanted to learn how to make a stencil, so I flipped through the newspaper to find a picture for him to practice on and saw this image of Andre the Giant. And he said, why don't you do this? And he said, no, that's stupid. I'm not doing it. And as an inside joke, I just made this stencil of it and wrote Andre the Giant Has a Posse, 7 feet four, 520 pounds on it. And it was very nonsensical. It was sort of, I called it absurdist propaganda. But it began with that. But quickly, because Andre was someone who I think to certain people was seen as this gentle giant and to others was seen as very sinister, it had this Rorschach quality, the image where each person's interpretation was a reflection of their personality. And I became really fascinated by that, how people deal with images in public space. And it evolved from the original Andre the Giant Has a Posse image to more of the Obey campaign, the Orwellian Big Brother's watching you cropped in image of Andre that had been streamlined and simplified to become more of a symbol.
Well, so at some point you hit it big. I mean, not just as a punk graffiti activist, but as an artist. You know, suddenly you've got museums and gallery owners calling. You've had shows at major museums around the world, which must have been both incredibly gratifying and also complicated.
I guess the progression was so gradual that, you know, for me, I never looked at it like, oh, yeah, I just hit it big. It was a very, very slow progression. And I had a strong belief that if what I was doing as an artist resonated, that eventually it would, you know, I would be able to make a living from it. And I worked as a graphic designer for a lot of years. I worked as a screen printer. I did a lot of things just to survive. But really, the first 10 years of my career, I lived in poverty. And then I started to get some gallery shows. And also, the internet became a way to sell work. And a magazine called Juxtapose gave me a nice feature. And that was sort of the lowbrow magazine that was started by the people that started Thrasher Skateboard Magazine. And all these things converged conveniently for me to all of a sudden have a career as an artist.
But in the meantime, there's this whole underground community who've accused you repeatedly of selling out. I mean, how do you respond to that? Does that make you feel angry, guilty?
No, neither. It makes me feel frustrated sometimes because I feel like some of the people that are accusing me of being a sellout don't understand that I'm advocating for them in everything that I do. I'm trying to pave the way for people that feel like what they do is not appreciated, that it has, that society doesn't get them. And so it's a little bit frustrating for me sometimes, but, you know, I look at the concept of a sellout being compromising your integrity to pander to the lowest common denominator purely for commercial purposes. I've been able to succeed despite of my unwillingness to compromise what I do, which, at least in my opinion, I mean, there are things I've had to do to survive. Some people look at commercial work I did as a graphic designer 10 years ago, and they think that it was done because my street art had created opportunities for me to exploit and cash in on. Actually, that work was done before my street art was viable at all, and it's the money that I took from those projects to continue to expand the reach of my street art. It was almost like a Robin Hood strategy. I always called it the inside-outside approach.
We should talk about your iconic image, the Obama Hope poster, which you made at the beginning of Obama's campaign, and you didn't make it for the campaign. You made it and just sort of put it out there yourself, and then they called you, is that right, and asked if they could use it?
When I made the Hope image, I made it for my audience, thinking that it would affect a few hundred people and hoping that, no pun intended, that it would possibly become something that would resonate beyond just my audience, but knowing that I could at least affect a few people who were already paying attention to what I was doing. But I had, you know, no idea that it was going to become the viral phenomenon that it did. But the Obama campaign, they were happy to see it flourishing, but they also knew that a lot of the people that were helping to disseminate it were putting it, you know, in places that weren't totally legal or putting up stickers or posters here and there. So they were happy to have this image that captured the imagination of, I think, you know, maybe more cutting edge people, disseminated in a way that didn't seem attached to a more corporate campaign. So they were happy to harness that and then happy to utilize the style for stuff they were doing. But, you know, I worked very hard with a few other people to get the images out there. We made 300,000 posters and 500,000 stickers. And that was all funded by selling 1,400 posters and a few paintings that I made, all of which I then got sued for. Anyway, it was mostly me and a small group of people that were getting the image out there. But of course, it was on the internet. So people were, and I had a free download on my website, people were making their own copies. And, you know, numerous knockoffs too, which was great because all the knockoffs just point back to the original and the power of the original and making Obama more established as a patriotic mainstream character was what I think the need was at that time.
Well, so recently you came out with a new poster, which is almost a slap in the face to Obama, because instead of Obama's face, it's someone in a Guy Fawkes mask. Those are the masks that people have been wearing at the Occupy protests, with that same word, hope, and a question mark. And what were you thinking when you made that poster?
In 2008, I looked at Obama as this progressive delivery vehicle for policy movement in the right direction that I wanted to see. And I believe that Obama's a great person, a high-quality human being, but I think that I feel, and a lot of people feel, let down by his lack of strong messaging, not his lack of policy change, because he's been sabotaged by the right at every turn, but that he's not advocated vocally for the people who I think put him in office and the policies that they want to see. He's started to do it more recently. I think that the Occupy movement has shifted the conversation onto topics that are very important to discuss, and Obama's been addressing them in his speeches. But no, it wasn't intended to be a slap in the face to Obama. It was intended to be really a reminder to him that grassroots activism is what helped put him in office, and grassroots activism is behind Occupy, and he ought to be as well, if not literally behind the movement, behind the changes in policy that the movement is looking for. I'm hoping that it will maybe inspire the kind of messaging from him that I'd like to see.
That's artist Shepard Fairey. His original Obama Hope poster is now in the Smithsonian National Portrait Gallery as part of the permanent collection. And Strange Champ spoke with him.